Okay, I guess we'll get started. So,
oh, we give thanks for this precious day, for all gathered here and those far away, for the time we share with love and care.
Welcome. Welcome all to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. I am Dave Lambert. I am today's convener. Today promises to be a fascinating service. I'm glad you've all come. Today's service will concentrate on, is today a vacation day or is today the Sabbath? And by the end of the hour and 15 minutes, we'll know. So we are in the middle of summer. The ancients had a bit of a problem with time and with their rather loose term or loose use of the term God, but we might take summer as our seventh day. Genesis 2, to quote scripture, which I've never done before, and he, again, they have problems with the rather loose definition of God or time, and he or she or they or no one rested on the seventh day from all of his or her or their, you get the picture, the work they had done. So God blessed the seventh day, and he hallowed it, because on it God rested from all of his work, which he had done in creation. The summer, or at least one seventh of it, is our day of rest and our day of blessing. So why do we make this long trek up to the UUFM and make this commitment of time when we might prefer to read the Sunday papers or go for a walk, work in the garden, or remain immobile in front of the air conditioner at home? So is this Sunday a day of rest or a day some call the Sabbath? Today's service should help us with this distinction. There aren't too many kids in the audience today, so I will light the chalice, or if Dick, you want to come up and write the chalice, yeah, Dick. So as we light our chalice today, which is the traditional form of opening of the service for Unitarian Universalists, as we light our chalice today, and as we sing our hymn of community, let us remember that we are part of a great community of faith. So, stand as you're able and join in the singing of hymn number 112, Do You Hear? If we have a microphone coming around, please speak to it for joys and concerns. And please share with those in this community a short and a personal joy or a concern that is significant in your life. And please wait for the microphone, which Doug is walking around the room.
Sabrina Boker, my mother's been in the hospital for the past week. She's also been in the hospital a few other times, and I've been moving her, so I've been kind of missing you guys for a while. But she's getting out Monday, so hopefully she'll adjust to her new place. All right, thank you.
Hi, Larry Weaver. I'm just back from canoeing with my grandchildren, and I have here in the audience my grandson from Germany, Lasse Eckert.
Ann Marchin, and I have three joys, and sometimes they're tinged with concern. Excuse me, I was with my mother for her 102nd birthday last week, and she's doing well, but you know, that's an advanced age. And then my daughter Catherine is expecting a baby August 7th, and her blood pressure's creeping up a little bit, but we're hoping she'll be able to rest and keep it under control. And then my third joy, American Humanist Association magazine, Jamie Raskin, open humanist, wins Maryland primary election. He's the first openly humanist candidate to win in a primary, I guess, and now if he goes on to become, you know, a representative, he'll be the first humanist. There was a little quote here. When State Senator Nancy Jacobs said the Bible reserved marriage for a man and a woman, Raskin responded, "When you took your oath of office, you placed your hand on the Bible and swore to uplift the Constitution. You did not place your hand on the Constitution and swear to uphold the Bible." So, anyway, that's a big day for me because I think there are 20% of mixed-race Congress people and 7 openly gay members. So this is a big first for the humanists and atheists.
My sister Carol is visiting from Alaska.
Good morning. I'm thrilled to tell you that I just spent 2.5 beautiful days with my daughter, and sorry to say that she had to leave early this morning. I would have loved to have brought her to meet everyone and see her old friends at the UU. So.
Bryce Hobrock. We returned this week from 8 days in Buffalo, where we celebrated our granddaughter's fourth birthday. And the Northeast is very dry. You fly in and you find it's burned out to a brown color. And 2 weeks previously, we've driven to Illinois and found Illinois in the same condition. So there is concern. But I just want to take while I have the mic to announce that next week I'll be doing the children's program down the hall, and it's going to be a toga party. And so if you are a parent or know other kids, why we're going to dress each child, teach them how to tie a toga, and we're going to have some Roman foods and other kinds of fun things. So I just wanted to mention that.
I just returned for 2 weeks in Montreal visiting my middle girl Irene and my wonderful 2-year-old hilarious grandson. And water is free in Montreal. They don't have to pay any money for water, to believe that, because they have tons.
It's been 2 years since me and my family has last visited, and I'm really happy we actually visited, so, and we're going back to come more often, so yeah.
Okay, although unspoken, we hold the joys and concerns of others in this fellowship close to our hearts, as they are to yours. So we don't have too many children here, but those who are here are more than welcome to come on down for the children's story. Or not. Well, there are two, three, four. Okay, your choice of colors. Okay, there's no book, and the story today...
Come on over closer.
She doesn't bite.
Don't be shy. He doesn't bite.
Yeah, neither of us bite. Well, I'm not so sure about John Blue. She might bite. Okay, this is summer, and unless you're enrolled in soccer camp or math camp or you're taking summer courses, you're on vacation this summer. So think about this summer, and what do you like to do that is fun? So, what do you like to do that's fun?
Use the microphone if you want. Anybody?
What did you say? I was letting her know. Okay. These kids don't like to have fun.
Okay. So what do you do this?
Nothing they do for fun.
Nothing they do for fun? Okay, yeah.
Swim.
Okay, swim. Okay, that's fun.
Video games.
Okay. See, now we've unleashed the reservoir here, the dam. Just have fun.
Just have fun. Maybe some of those people have things they do.
Movies.
Canoeing.
Travel.
Reading. You guys would have come up with these as well if we'd given you more time.
Anything else?
Pokemon.
Oh, yeah. Do I have to put a go on the end of that?
Walk the dog.
Pokemon Go, we have that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pokemon Go. Yeah.
Are you using that? Are you playing that?
Play games.
Okay.
Drumming. Okay. Okay, now, if you want to change gears a little bit, what have you been doing this summer that is challenging, that presents a challenge to you?
Nothing really.
Okay, well, that's sort of a challenge, doing nothing. Any ideas for what is challenging, besides doing nothing?
Have you learned anything new?
Swimming lessons?
Okay, that's a challenge. Swimming lessons is a challenge. So just swimming is fun, but swimming lessons is a challenge. Yeah, okay.
Learning to sew?
Tango lessons. Anybody here involved with tango lessons? No? Okay.
Writing.
Okay. Okay, now taking a little bit of a different look, we've talked about challenges, we've talked about fun. What have you done this summer that is inspirational?
What
does that mean? Yeah, that's a hard question. After you have done it, what lifts you up and makes you feel spiritual? Okay, finding that is inspirational. So do you have a definition for inspirational? Better than mine?
Let's see. Inspirational. I like that idea of things that lift you up, that make you feel, that raise you to a higher place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's cool.
What else is inspirational? That's a good one. And we're throwing it open to the floor.
Attending UU.
Attending UU. Well, that's the next one.
Going hiking in the mountains.
Oh, okay. Hiking in the mountains and enjoying the wonderful scenery. What was that?
Canoeing in Arkansas.
Canoeing in Arkansas. Or Minnesota, or anywhere else.
Conversations with friends.
What is inspiration?
Singing and chanting.
So I didn't hear all of that, Katie. What did you say?
Learning to identify bees.
Oh, okay. Learning to identify bees with Tom Phillips. Or,
okay. I just summarized that as identifying.
Identifying bees. Okay. Oh, aren't they all the same? Okay, well, those are all really good inspirational items that you feel better afterwards because of the beautiful scenery in the mountains or the canoeing in Arkansas or listening to a beautiful piece of music. Okay, so here we are at the UUFM, Unitarian Universalist Church Fellowship, whatever you want to call it. Is this a fun place? Why are you here? Is this fun? Is this inspirational? Do your parents have the car keys and they say, time to get in the car, let's go, and you have no choice in the matter? So what do you see as this time? Is this a fun time? Is this an inspirational time? Is this a challenging time for you?
Fun time.
Okay, it's fun time. Okay, you get to go to RE, especially next week with the toga party.
Oh, but today with maps.
Okay, so it's fun. Do you enjoy being with the other people your age? Other kids? No? Okay, well.
Well, some of us enjoy others.
Yeah, some of us do, yeah. The kids don't, but we do. Okay, so the entire service that John Lou is going to give today has to do with, is this a vacation time or is this devoted to Sabbath? So that's why this question is the... Our time here spent at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, is this fun? Is this challenging? Is this inspirational? Or is this something else? Okay, well, I hope you enjoy your time together with the RE cohorts, and we'll see you out.
Please. Oh, we love our hearts, go with you. Go enjoy our hopes, go to. Oh.
Okay, so we now ask you to please be generous as we pass the offertory baskets around, and so that we can continue the good works of this fellowship. We have two readings this morning. The first is from a book written by the Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, published in 1951, The Sabbath, Its Meaning for Modern Man. One who wants to enter, and I quote now, one who wants to enter the holiness of the day must first lay down the profanity of clattering commerce, of being yoked to toil. He must say farewell to manual work, and learn to understand that the world has already been created and will survive without his help. 6 days a week, we wrestle with the world, wringing profit from the earth. On the Sabbath, we especially care for the seed of eternity planted in the soul. The world has our hands, but our soul belongs to someone else. 6 days a week, we seek to dominate the world. On the seventh day, we try to dominate the self. Labor is a craft, but perfect rest is an art. The seventh day is a palace in time which we build. How else express glory in the presence of eternity if not by the silence of abstaining from noisy acts? There is a realm of time where the goal is not to have, but to be. Not to own, but to give. Not to control, but to share. Not to subdue, but to be in accord. Life goes wrong when the control of space, the acquisition of things of space, becomes our sole concern. As I said, we have two readings today. The first was provided by our minister, Reverend John O'Leary. The second is by an economist, which is me. And because I am an economist, the next reading will be a paraphrase of an article, of an essay, written by John Maynard Keynes in 1930. Economic possibilities for our grandchildren. For the first time since his creation, man will be faced with his real, his permanent problem. How to use his freedom from pressing economic cares, how to occupy his leisure, to live wisely and agreeably and well. Yet there is no country and no people, I think, who can look forward to the age of leisure and of abundance without a dread. For we have been trained too long to strive and not to enjoy. It is a fearful problem. So for many ages to come, the old Adam, here's paraphrasing, and Eve, will be so strong in us that everyone will have to do some work if they are to be contented. But as Keynes continues, 3 hours a day is quite enough to satisfy the old Adam or the Eve in most of us. The rest of the time should be spent in leisure. So please join me as you are able to sing hymn number 100. I've got Peace Like a River.
So a while back, it was summertime some years ago, I followed a series of Kathy comic strips about vacationing, or sort of vacationing. In one, a vacationing colleague calls Kathy to ask her to fax him a deal he had left her in charge of. In another, the only messages left for the boss are the emails, faxes, and cell phone calls from vacationing employees assuring him that they're easy to access if he needs anything from them. Now, this little series went on quite a while, and you'd almost think they were onto some kind of phenomena. And then I read a business column whose writer was upset because there are actually CEOs in this day and age who do not get back to a newspaper columnist within a day of their phone call. That's not good enough for business these days, the columnist asserts, and goes on to describe how one person called her back from the Olympic Stadium while watching a gymnastics meet. Oh, come on! Get over yourself! Are you really so hooked into the working world that we can't escape for a day or two? Or even watch a gymnastics competition in peace without the interference of a phone call? we may have lost some of our ability to take vacation as seriously as it deserves. And maybe vacation is not enough. It is an opportune time to remind you that preachers often preach what they most need to hear. I begin with a confession. I am overly responsible. One of those folks who gravitates naturally to the kitchen for cleanup rather than the parlor for conversation. A Martha rather than a Mary, if you know the old biblical story. So the truth is, the Kathy comic strip strikes almost too close to home to actually be funny. There was a time when there was more time, or so it seems, when people took time to have dinner together every night, when Sunday meant gathering with family and taking it easy, when weekends weren't frantic, and going on vacation meant you were away from it all. I fear we've lost the ability or even the inclination to let go and be gone. And with that, we've lost some important spiritual connections. We could try to reclaim the spiritual discipline of vacation, or to take it a little further, turn to the idea of Sabbath. I'm sure there are challenges to reclaiming Sabbath. Too many of us suffered through rules about what we could and could not do on Sundays. I, for one, remember blue laws, where there were bunches of things that you couldn't buy on Sundays, including alcohol. I've gotten pretty good at taking vacation, though. When I get in that car and drive away, I leave the day-to-day anxieties. I admit to taking my cell phone, but I don't worry too much when I'm out of range. I had a really good lesson once when I accidentally drowned my cell phone while at the beach. And maybe you can suck out the moisture with rice, but if it's like salt water, With no calls possible, I had no choice but to let go of the need for them. We could blame the technology era for the drift from the sanity of peaceful escapes, the instant access provided by cell phones and texts and Facebook following us everywhere, the changing expectations of availability, the fraying of boundaries between home and work. I have sat at a retreat in a lounge area and watched a dozen or more ministers eagerly engaged with their laptops and notebooks and wondered if that was really what retreat was supposed to be. I can't blame it all on technology, though. We are fighting a bigger issue, a human drive. This problem did not start with the internet or the telephone. I'm certain of that because there have always been religious strictures that push us to let go of all that distracts us from genuine living. And that's what I think the Sabbath laws were about. Laying down the profanity of clattering commerce, as Heschel called it. We're not just talking rest. Of course, we understand the need for rest, for a break. Everyone knows that a good night's sleep makes most problems easier to tackle. And when the mind just isn't on top, even 5 minutes stretch on the couch can do wonders. What we're talking about here, though, is bigger than that. Even bigger than vacation. Vacation is getting away from the routine, finding things that are new and exciting. Miroslav Volf, a theologian at Yale Divinity School, writes about our modern inability to find contentment. We seem to have an insatiable desire for everything. The next shiny piece of technology, what Wolf calls a rushing stream of both amazing and not so amazing goods and services. Our market economy is in the business of keeping us unsatisfied so that we always crave more. And vacations may be just another shiny bauble to add to the stream, something to distract from the dailiness of existence, to offer excitement and fun, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we need something more. The standards for the Hebrew Sabbath were high, still are for Orthodox Jews. Not just stay home from work, do nothing that is work. No cooking, no writing, no exchange of money, no travel. Today, the Orthodox do not so much as flip a light switch on Sabbath. The biblical book of Leviticus, part of the Torah, lays out these demands and fits them into an even larger calendar of taking it easy. Every seventh year, says Leviticus 25, you shouldn't work the land. You can eat anything that just naturally grows on it, but tilling and planting, harvesting, all out. This is the origin of our sabbatical. That is the academic and religious practice of taking significant time away from the regular working grind every few, originally 7 years. And when seven sets of those 7 years go by, the Bible calls for a jubilee year. In that year, all debt is dissolved, all slaves are freed, and all the land that has been lost or sold reverts to its original owners. The whole world goes nuts. Jubilee was supposed to be a super Sabbath. Biblical scholars claim that there's actually no evidence that the Jubilee ever took place, that it might have been a plan that was hatched by the scholars and priests and actual rulers just chose to ignore, because it's not very practical. But this may all seem esoteric to you. Who cares what rules a group of tribal people put together 600 or 700 years before the Common Era? It matters because it reminds us that there has always been a need to tell people to stop, to chill, to take a break, a breather. The Jubilee may never have happened, but Sabbath did, because we human beings need it. The Episcopal priest, Barbara Brown Taylor, has been practicing a weekly Sabbath for many years. She sees it as quite different from the brief breaks most of us try to take. She says, plenty of us take an hour here and there and call it Sabbath, which is like driving 5 miles to town and calling it Europe. Taylor writes that for the first couple years of Sabbath keeping, her mind swam with questions. Does looking at a catalog count as shopping? Is puttering in the garden work if I'm just entertaining myself? By the third year, she became capable of resting without leaving home, letting all the work go. When Sabbath came, she now describes Sabbath as an experience of divine love that swamps both body and soul. Quite a difference from the Sabbath that theology professor Robert Sherman says many of us have come to regard as a quaint anachronism. He claims the problem we humans have is less a problem of time than of perception of time. His goal for Sabbath is moving from our time to God's time. Now, some of you may have a problem with that image. Let me reframe it a bit. Moving from our vision of limited time to a sense of eternity. The death clock website calculates the number of seconds you have left to live. Have you ever explored that? You can count them down. You can watch your seconds going. It says I have about 587 million seconds left. But watching those seconds tick by cements the image of limited time. Sabbath time is broader than that. Expansive, timeless, open. There's no ticking clock on Sabbath. When I walked the Camino de Santiago, the 500-mile pilgrimage in Spain 5 years ago, I often manage to achieve something that I came to call Camino Mind, where I was completely in the moment, where nothing existed but my immediate environment and the walk. I still think of that state, when I can occasionally reach it, as Camino Mind, a wonderful gift from that journey. And it's hard. It's hard for us contemporary people with the lives we live to understand that sort of timelessness occurring on a weekly basis. For many of us, even occasionally achieving it seems improbable. Summer, though, may be our opportunity to try to stretch our minds around this concept. Gary Schmidt and Susan Felch have compiled what they call a spiritual biography of summer. In summer, they say, time does not seem to move. Instead, time collects. Or perhaps it might be better said to pool, to halt in our headlong rush, to be fully in a particular time, to stop long enough to see what lies around us rather than to be always merely glimpsing. Maybe now, in the summer, we can construct for ourselves this new, renewed, renewing sense of time. There's a reason that we're ready for vacation. There are lessons to learn here. Vacation invites us to go out and play. Remember going out to play when you were a child? You didn't go out with any intention beyond play. And something happened. Maybe it was ball. Maybe it was house. Maybe it was making mud pies or climbing trees or chasing lightning bugs. Whatever, it simply came into being from the gathered children or from yourself. Play is spontaneous, fresh, lively, refreshing. As adults, we play when we walk down an unfamiliar street to see where it might lead, or drive down a country road, or explore an antique shop we stumble into, or creek walk. In the creek more than outside of it. When we remember how to plop down on the ground and stare up through the trees and watch the clouds drift by. Some of us can set aside our adult judgments and play freely with our children or grandchildren. Play, it's been said, is the work of children, what teaches them about the world. For us grown-ups, it's refreshment. The best vacations remind us to play. And there are no Sabbath strictures against it, no matter what your puritanical forefathers said. Significant in playfulness is spontaneity. Part of what vacation and Sabbath free us from is our regular routines. We don't have to get up at our usual time. We eat different things. Maybe when we feel like it, instead of on a schedule. We try something new, scuba diving or rock climbing or painting with watercolors. With nothing pressing to do, we notice the texture of the moss on the rocks or the exact shade of blue of the lake. We take time to follow the song of the finch and even catch sight of him. Robbed of our routines, vacation demands spontaneity. And creativity grows out of that spontaneity that came from nothingness, from lack of something we have to do. The singer Fiona Apple took her time in producing her CD, Extraordinary Machine. For 6 years, she was absent from the music scene, and asked what she did during that time. She replied, "I sat in my yard with a little knife and cut sticks. The stillness was exactly what I needed." Sometimes we can become most productive by letting go of the need to be productive. creativity particularly, does not come when we are pressed for time. Rather, it grows out of the void, the emptiness, boredom, the same place that produces play, lightness, and spontaneity. Every creative artist knows that you have to let go and play with the ideas, the materials, and the arrangements to get there. You can't force it. The stillness, said Fiona Apple, was exactly what I needed. How often do we keep ourselves from doing nothing because we're convinced we have too much we have to do? We can only let go to go on vacation or even take time in our everyday lives if we can trust the world to go on accomplishing what it needs to get done without us. We are not critical to the world staying on course. We become wrapped up in believing that our particular tasks, our peculiar approaches required, or all hell will break loose. It's not true. As Bertrand Russell said, one of the symptoms of an approaching nervous breakdown is the belief that one's work is terribly important. If he were a physician, he said, he'd recommend a holiday to anyone in such a condition. Now, this is not to say that what we do does not matter. It does. We have to have a sense of purpose in our lives, an idea that we're making a real and valid contribution. The problem comes when we're so steeped in ego that we lose sight of our relatively small place in the scheme of the universe. And that's what Heschel was talking about when he said, life goes wrong when the control of space, the acquisition of things of space, becomes our sole concern. Too easily, we get caught up in earning money and producing things, essentially in making idols. Often our egos are so tied to our achievements that they're very hard to release. And that's why one of the spiritual lessons of Sabbath, and maybe even a vacation if we do it right, is letting go of our normal desire to achieve, to produce, to accomplish, and simply instead to be. It requires humility to understand that others will find a way to take over what we usually do and they'll do fine. Or it could just go undone for a day or a week. It takes even more humility to realize that others may do it differently and maybe even better. Don't you hate when that happens? But it's good for us. And the time away leads us to the play, the spontaneity, the creativity, and ultimately to gratitude. If we make space for the goodness of life to creep into our awareness, we cannot help but be grateful. Taking the time to pick and eat fresh peaches so juicy that the liquid runs down your arm. Or what we feel lying in a hammock in a gentle breeze. Our response to being overwhelmed by the love of family or friends surrounding us as we sing together or eat together or tell old stories that everybody already knows. It's not really about a particular time in the summer or a particular day like the Sabbath, or even a particular event in our lives like a vacation, because we can do vacation wrong, very wrong. There's a Wendell Berry poem, Vacation, I want to share with you. He writes, "Once there was a man who filmed his vacation. He went flying down the river in his boat with his video camera to his eye, making a moving picture of the moving river upon which his sleek boat moved swiftly toward the end of his vacation. He showed his vacation to his camera, which pictured it, preserving it forever, the river, the trees, the sky, the light, the bow of his rushing boat behind which he stood with his camera, preserving his vacation even as he was having it, so that after he had it, he would still have it. It would be there. With a flick of a switch, there it would be. But he would not be in it. He would never be in it." No, that's not the way. The way is to be in it, to be in the moment. Sabbath or not, vacation or not, home, away, summer, winter, spring, fall, to be in the moment that is happening here, now, where the goal is not to have but to be, not to own but to give, not to control but to share, not to subdue but to be in accord. And it's found in all different religious traditions. Alan Watts quoted the Tang master Lin Chi as saying, in Buddhism there's no place for using effort, just be ordinary and nothing special. Eat your food, move your bowels, pass water, and when you're tired, go and lie down. The ignorant will laugh at me, but the wise will understand. Jesus said, consider the lilies of the field. They neither toil nor spin, yet Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed as one of these. My favorite teacher, the Chinese Taoist Zhuangzi, said, do not be an embodier of fame. Do not be a storehouse of schemes. Do not be an undertaker of projects. Do not be a proprietor of wisdom. Embody to the fullest what has no end, and wander where there is no trail. Hold on to all you have that you have received from heaven, but do not think that you have gotten anything. Be empty. That is all. Or as UU Minister David Rankin wrote, there must be a time when we cease speaking to be fully present with ourselves. There must be a time when we exclude clamor by listening to nothing whatsoever. There must be a time when we forego our plans as if we had no plans at all. There must be a time when we abandon conceits and tap into a deeper wisdom. There must be a time when we stop striving and find the peace within. And we have some time. We have some time if there are thoughts that came up for you, reflections, questions. Thoughts. Larry had.
I think I know some of what you're talking about, because last night I was lucky enough to take family, children, grandchildren, and their friends out to eat. So there's a long table. Now, I don't hear very well. And consequently, I was not at all distracted by the conversations. But I could see the wonderful happiness and interaction, the young people at one end and the middle-aged people in the middle, and a wife and a friend up near me. But I was incredibly happy and content.
Mm-hmm.
That's a piece of what you were talking about. There are other ways of being in the moment there, as you're talking about, but that, for me, last night was quite definitely one of them. Thank you, Lisa.
That timelessness is associated with contentment. Yeah.
Well, I understand the idea of a Sabbath and a vacation, because I've been running around for, about 2-3 weeks straight doing stuff, and I just hadn't had a chance to take a break. So your talk on the Sabbath is hitting home, because I'm like, I do need a break. So, yeah, people just can't keep going and going and going, and then they crash. So,
right, right.
So in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, they have the restraints and the observances. There are five of each. And santosha, which means contentment, is one of the observances for yogis.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Renner. This is an interesting topic. There's actually been some publications in the past couple of years I've been watching. AltNet and Utney Reader has both had pretty extensive articles on the need for the U.S. population to take their vacation. We are the largest industrialized nation that takes the fewest days of vacation a year. And the long-term effect on this is that we've become workaholics and we don't know how to relax. Mm-hmm. And one article in particular, I can't remember if this was in Mother Jones or the Utney Reader, was talking about the health impact this is having on especially middle-aged men. Mm-hmm. Already in Italy before I left, when I was working still at the university there, out of 100 men in Italy, 60 had troubles with fertility due to work-related stress. And I believe that number has now been also copied here in the U.S. It's a growing problem for young couples that face issues with fertility, and it's usually stress-induced because they're not relaxing enough. I have never felt the same since I've been in the U.S. as I did when I lived in Italy, because lessons would be done in mid-June, we would have oral exams, and then I was off until the 1st of October. Mm-hmm. Didn't have to show up on campus, didn't have to do anything. I was off. And that really has been eroded away by the European Union. When I hit Italy in 1982, most factory workers had the whole month of August off. Mm-hmm. Now it's down to 2 weeks, and 2 weeks at Christmas, whereas they used to have 6 to 8 weeks of vacation a year. Mm-hmm. It's still more than we get here. Mm-hmm. I remember one time in particular, and this had to happen before 1994, I was giving lessons to the son of some engineering professor. And, you know, when I was off, I would take calendars down, mm-hmm. I'd turn off clocks, and I never wore a watch. And so I thought it was a Tuesday, so I got on the train, I went over a couple villages to where the professor had his summer cottage, and I showed up at the train station and he wasn't there to pick me up. And I was like, well, this is really odd, something must have happened. So I got to an Italian telephone and called the house, and the wife answered and said, but Mr. Renner, you're not due today. It's Saturday, you're due on Wednesday. I've never achieved that again. But I think that really indicates being in a state of Sabbath, mm-hmm. when you don't know what day it is. I think that's really an mm-hmm. important achievement.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you talk about the changes in Europe, but I still am envious of what some of my European friends managed to have, you know. I have a friend in England who because she's over a certain age, has an extra day off every week. She only has to work 4 days. Same salary, same everything, but she's, you know, like over 60, so she gets a day off.
So when you talked about, like, Sabbath and all, like, just not worrying and mm-hmm. letting go, I suffer from anxiety. So, like, mm-hmm. I have where I constantly worry. I have no time where I have no space where I actually just breathe. And mm-hmm. one time I was in a car with my family, and we were just driving, and we were searching around, we're searching for campsites because we were planning on camping for my birthday, because it was just, why not? Mm-hmm. And it was, at one point, I suddenly realized there was no worrying happening. Mm. I felt content. And it was the greatest feeling ever. So I kind of understand a little bit, and it's nice.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, these things are, I think it really is a spiritual practice to get to where you can regularly encounter that sort of timeless contentment. It really takes practice. And it's countercultural.
As we're talking about the ability to rest ourselves, and I can really appreciate what you're saying about having that moment of quiet mind. It's made me think about an article I read years ago, also in Utney Reader, such a great thing. And it was a story about a woman who cured her chronic fatigue syndrome by napping in her backyard for 6 months, and that's all she did. And then in the end of the article, she made an analogy to our constant searching, striving, producing, and what it does to ourselves and what we are doing to the earth, that we can't sit back and rest and quit extracting, mining, using, exploiting. I think it's powerful.
Mm-hmm. 4 years ago, I retired after 42 years at K-State. And I retired not knowing what I was going to be doing for the rest of my life. If I'm doing anything, it turns out I'm primarily spending my time on musical activities. But it struck me how many people, especially in the academic community, are asking me, what are you doing now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, retirement should be the sabbatical. And yet we continue to expect people that are retired to be doing something.
And you should just be playing.
Well, I am.
The idea that we've been talking about, that the world can get along just fine without any one of us, reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from Charles de Gaulle, who said, the cemeteries are full of the graves of indispensable people.
Right. Absolutely.
I've been thinking along Jim's comments that you obviously have been addressing two different audiences here, those who are not retired and those of us who are. And I think the sign, maybe how you can tell one from the other, is that we talk a lot slower. But when we did retire about 20 years ago, we made the right choice of having a project to consume us so that we didn't go from our non-retired schedule to just nothing to do. And so we built a house, and I've been impressed, or we've both been impressed over the years, that the secret to retirement is largely architecture, because we had the good judgment to build a sunroom as our only eating place. So every meal we sit in the woods watching the birds and nature and pets and whatever around us. So if we lived in an apartment where we had nothing but the walls of the room to look at, I'm sure retirement would be a little bit drabber.
Mm-hmm. That's an important point, too, because it is cultivating that sense. But one of the things that helps cultivate that sense of contentment is arranging our space in such a way that it welcomes that.
About needing the stillness to get back to doing art and things like Fiona Apple. I play the violin, and I've been practicing forever, and I always find the need to practice. Like, I have to set time in my day, but I find that I get more accomplished and I work farther in my music when I never planned on practicing, like after a long day, and then I just pick up my violin and it sounds better. So, if that makes sense.
Well, I don't know if anyone else has been reading about the robotic revolution that, you know, within a certain number of years, there will be nothing left for humans to do that a machine isn't doing for us. There'll be no jobs. We'll have to figure out some kind of a level of income that everybody can survive. But, you know, then we'll have this whole problem of what are we going to do with all that time?
And isn't that the problem, though, that in that reading he addressed in 1930s? Yeah, in the 1930s.
Yeah, Anne brings up a good point, and John and Luke picked up on that as well, as far as in 1930, which was quite a few years ago, I'm not sure I can figure that out quickly, John Maynard Keynes wrote about exactly the same problem, and he uses the phrase, which wasn't in the reading, technological unemployment, which is what Trump is pushing right now. You know, all the manufacturing jobs that have been lost, many of those are due to globalization and technological change. So I think it's very interesting as far as what do we do with all this leisure time. But I was sitting here thinking about what Chris Renner said as far as the vacation time. And maybe I remember things that I've read this morning more than I do last week. But I was reading an article this morning that the lack of taking a vacation time or time away from one's job is being recognized as the source of a lot of stress-related problems and health problems. And this one article I read, which is talking about $100 to $200 billion a year in terms of health-related ailments that are due to the stress from work-related problems. Mm-hmm. And some companies are forcing people to take retirement, or not retirement, but forcing people to take the vacation time that they're due, are forcing people to not respond to emails overnight, you know, turn off the phones, essentially. So it is recognized as a major problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people and some companies are addressing it.
Yeah.
So that was in The Economist this week. So those of you who subscribe to The Economist can read the article.
As human beings, we're not made that way. We're not that made to be 24/7 on.
The idea of guaranteed income for doing nothing is coming up more frequently today, and I believe it was in Iceland or someplace in Europe that they had a referendum on a guaranteed annual income for everyone. And I think that speaks to the trend of robotics and artificial intelligence, at which time there won't be anything to do, and so you'll have to guarantee a sustainable kind of life for people. The venture capitalists really speak, as Anne reported, when they decide where to put their money into all the new technology ideas that come about. When they were asked, well, what's your objective here? Their objective is so that humans will not have to work at all. And what are they going to do then? The answer from Andreessen and Horowitz, venture capitalist firm, is that they will be able to study the arts and humanities nonstop. Mm-hmm. Now, that's probably good news to humanists among us, but I think people need a rock to push against in order to make themselves vital and to live well.
I think it's a matter of balance, you know. Too much work and we're out of balance. Too much rest and we're out of balance. You know, like so many other things in our lives, it's a matter of balance.
My husband did one of the very first studies and a book called The Meaning of Work and Retirement. And this was done in the early 50s. And it was a study of the Photo Engravers Union. And the results of the study were that if they could have income, they would all be happy to retire. There was no question about it. I think that, but with me, I wanted to add this, with me, Sundays have never been the same since my grandfather died. Because from the time I was born until I was almost 11, we went to his house every Sunday, and there was a huge group of people and much discussion and much conversation, and life has never really been the same since.
Yeah, it's a precious thing.
Carol and Terry were there yesterday, too. I don't know if anybody else was at the sustainability conference that the College of Engineering has. This was the 11th. I thought you all looked kind of familiar. Okay. And one of the people wanted us to think about when we had been the happiest and if the outdoors was involved in it. And there was a general consensus that people are happier outdoors when they're not surrounded by the human-built environment.
Okay, well, okay, let Marjean be the last comment then.
Several years ago, I read a science fiction book, and process had been developed by which they could put chlorophyll into human skin so people didn't have to work for food anymore. All they had to do was go out and stand in the sun. And the upshot of it was the whole world economy collapsed because nobody had to work. So I just thought that was interesting.
So my wish for all of us is may you make time in your life to play. May the riches of living wash over you spontaneously. May your heart know both gratitude and humility. May your life be composed of one moment after another of wonder, goodness, beauty, and awe. Our closing hymn is number 311, Let It Be a Dance. I invite you to stand as you're willing and able. From Abraham Heschel, just to be is a blessing. Just to live is holy. So may it be for you and those you love this day, this week, this lifetime.